Hello, everybody, and welcome to Sparity, the podcast where you don't have to read a classic book, but you can go to a cocktail party and act like you did. My name's Taylor. I'm here once again with Crystal.
Heyo, so excited to finish Frankenstein.
Yeah, buddy. And I'm here once again with Kalina.
Hello. I second what Crystal said and second what Taylor said. Kalina is indeed my name.
Yeah, and we left on a dramatic drop-off last time from the second part of Frankenstein by Mary Shelley. And this episode, we should be able to wrap it up. Any predictions for the finale?
The monster's gonna die.
I've had my heart broken so many times by this, Taylor. I don't want to predict anything because I'm just afraid of what'll happen if I do.
That's kind of why I wanted you to. I was like... Oh man.
No, I genuinely do think that the monster is going to have to die, and he's going to die by, his owner, that's not right, his father. He's going to kill him and be like, I'm sorry, I have to kill you. And then, or he's going to die heroically as he's killing the monster.
Wait, no. Hold on. Because at the beginning, we saw the monster running around the ice. So are we going to go all the way back to like, real time and see what's going to happen? If we're going to like leave story mode?
Oh yes, I think that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to catch us up to exactly where they are right now, and then it'll go and it'll continue from that and end.
Okay, all right, I can get behind that.
Well, there's only one way to find out, and that's to start with the next chapter. So here we go. All right.
Can you do that again, but in a Mario voice?
There's only one way to find out, so we go to chapter 17. Here we go.
Yes.
Was that okay?
That's great. Okay.
Chapter 17. Frankenstein is in shock. He's trying to process what was just asked of him. The monster confirms, quote, "You must create a female for me with whom I can live in the interchange of those sympathies necessary for my being. This you alone can do. And I demand it of you as a right which you must not refuse to concede." End quote. So Frankenstein's trying to figure out what to do with this. The monster's story was kind of nice. Like, you know, he had good intentions at the beginning, but he also blatantly admitted to murdering his brother William and framing Justine. So with that in mind, Frankenstein responds with rage. He refuses. He says, absolutely not. No amount of torture could ever make me create another thing like you. And the creature says, whoa, I don't have any intention of torturing you. I'm just going to talk to you. He wants to reason with him. He reminds Frankenstein that, hey, everybody hates me. Everybody wants to kill me. Even you yourself, Frankenstein. So just hear me out. And the monster's choices are basically to sit there and take everyone's hate or to fight back. So, of course, he chooses to fight back, which is why he's so vengeful and rageful and stuff. If humans were kind, he'd be good, but they can't be kind to him because of how he looks. So this is the situation that he's in. He kind of reiterates this. And the monster says, look, my demands are reasonable. One female companion. That's it. One Frankenette.
And then he's going to want children next. You wait.
Oh, we'll see.
Yeah. Franken Littles.
Starts with that. Yeah, Franken Littles.
Yeah, so we've kind of answered the original Ken doll question, because considering he has specified that it must be a female, I think, yeah, we might have come to a conclusion there.
Or we've just opened the door to a really philosophical discussion of what is a male and a female.
It's some really bad fan art. Please don't. Man. Actually, you know what? If this podcast got popular enough for bad, like, Rule 34 fan art of Frank and Kendall, I'd be pretty happy.
All right. I know what to get Taylor for Christmas on a mug.
No, that does not mean you are allowed to make this fan art yourself, Kalina. No, that is not what that means.
Okay, that's what I heard. I'll outsource. Okay. I'll outsource. It's fine.
No, you're not allowed to make AI generated of Frank Kendall. All right. Okay. So the monster says he wants his female companion, and when he gets this female companion, they're not going to have anyone but each other. He knows that. And he knows it's not going to bring him, like, utter bliss and happiness, but at least he won't be alone and completely miserable. And he swears that once he has his companion, he's going to flee to the remote corners of the world where no one will ever see him again, which is South America. Which is kind of funny. This is another classic literature book where it's written in England and they just assume that like South America is like another planet. But basically he promises to flee to South America. The wilds out there, they'll never bother anyone again. And Frankenstein refuses again. He says, I'll never do that. Never. But the monster persists and they go back and forth in conversation for a while. Frankenstein considers the points that the monster is making. Number one, he did seem to have good intentions originally. He did kind of persuade him in that fact. And two, the monster is obviously powerful. He's huge. He lives in this icy wilderness alone. And he's not going to be able to fight him. And three, this whole thing is technically Frankenstein's fault. And it's mankind's problem, not just his. Because if he refuses to do this, this thing is going to be a terror for people besides himself. So given all these conditions, Frankenstein agrees. He says, okay, I'll do this. On one condition, that you swear, absolutely swear, that you'll follow your promise and you'll leave and we'll never see you again.
Okay, well, I'm very disappointed because for the first time in this whole book, Frankenstein like had and showed some spine in saying no to the monster. But after just talking a little bit more, you know, hearing, you know, I had to kill the boy. Fine, I'll make you a companion.
Yeah, no, I think a good chunk of this part of the book, this last part of the book, is just how feeble can Frankenstein get? Like, how pathetic can he get before it's a bridge too far? It's too pathetic.
All right, yeah, this is definitely so a tragedy.
Yeah. The monster is absolutely elated, and he swears to comply. Quote, depart to your home and commence your labors. I shall watch their progress with unutterable anxiety, and fear not, but that when you are ready, I shall appear. End quote. And with that, he darts out of the hut and sprints away. So Frankenstein is sitting there with this decision he just made, and he needs to go home. So he travels out of this mountain hut out in the middle of nowhere, all the way back to Geneva. He travels through the night to get there, worrying the whole time about what he's just agreed to do. And that's the end of the chapter.
I have a feeling this is going to get real gross.
Is it not already?
Oh, true.
I have a idea that he could do, right? He could be like, I'm going to be really clever and I'm going to make a really, really like disproportional, ugly woman for you. And then bam, see, he's still followed orders, but he's just not being complicit fully. Big brain idea right there.
He's going to make Frankenet like extra ugly. And that's his master evil
that's
plot.
That's his gotcha. Yeah. Look, I'm saying it's an idea.
My creature, I have made your companion, and I made her so she chews with her mouth open. No! Chapter 18. Weeks pass, now that he's back home in Geneva, and Frankenstein just can't bring himself to start. Quote, I feared the vengeance of the disappointed fiend, yet I was unable to overcome my repugnance to the task which was enjoined me. End quote. But he figures he's got to do something, so he looks into it a bit, and he starts estimating time, and he figures it's going to take him months to make this Frankenet monster. But he hears of this English philosopher in England who made a discovery that could actually help him out and speed things up a lot. So he thinks he should probably visit England or maybe write this guy letters, but either way, that's going to take a long time, and so he's really procrastinating, and he's just hanging out at home at Geneva. Over time, spent with his family, with his father, his brother Ernest, and Elizabeth, his sister slash wannabe lover. It's not actually his sister, but he's starting to look better. He's starting to be healthier. He's starting to be not quite so destroyed all the time. And his father notices this, and he tells him, oh, hey, my son, I'm glad you're feeling better. But I can still tell that you're depressed, and something occurred to me, and I think I know why. And Frankenstein goes like, oh, shit, right? Like, starts trembling all over and has one of his nervous breakdowns. And his father says, yep, I know why. I think it's because we all expect you to marry Elizabeth, and we always have, and maybe you don't want to. That must be what it is. And Frankenstein says, oh, no, I want to marry Elizabeth. And his father says, oh, well, you guys should just do it now. I mean, it'll make everyone feel better. And I'm getting older and, you know, I don't have a lot of years left. So you guys should just do it now. But Frankenstein knows he can't do anything like that and take that sort of life decision, life path until this monster problem is taken care of. It's hanging over him like a cloud. He can't do it.
Like an angry ex.
Yeah, kind of is, really. So knowing that there's this philosopher that he needs to talk to in England, and that he does not want to start this project in his family's house, he figures, okay, maybe it's probably better if I go to England. So he tells his father, okay, I'm not going to marry Elizabeth just yet, but I would like to take a trip to England for a few months. And then when I come back, then I'll see about marrying Elizabeth. He also figures that the monster swore he was going to follow him. So if he goes somewhere else, his family should be safe. And his father agrees. He says, oh, okay, yeah, if you want to take this trip, that's fine. So they plan this trip. And as he's about to leave, he discovers that his family has secretly planned to have Henry Clerval, his really great, joyous, wonderful friend, go with him.
Ooh, did you say Henry Cavill?
Henry Clerval. Yeah, that's the name of his buddy who like met him at college and was like, took care of him and is like such a great guy. So they secretly planned to send Henry with him, and Frankenstein kind of needed to go alone, but he has to admit he's really happy that his best friend is coming and that he'll have someone to spend the journey with. And then he won't be so absorbed in his own thoughts and that sort of thing. So he says a tearful farewell to Elizabeth. Elizabeth is torn. She doesn't know why Frankenstein needs to take this trip, but she accepts it and he leaves.
So when you were reading it, did you get the feeling that Elizabeth is like, oh, I love Frankenstein back?
Oh, she totally does. No, she gushes over him several times.
Yeah. Aw, okay.
Yeah. No, you're sad about that.
No, that was a oh, that's cute. Aw, not like a great. Well, I mean, I guess if I'm being rational about it, ew. But okay.
I thought you were gonna say, oh, I really wanted that story arc to play out where she's like, forget you, Frankenstein. But
I love your monster instead.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. I'm leaving you for the monster.
He is so big and he is not a Ken doll at all. He is the exact opposite. Oh, anyway. Welcome to Sparity, everybody. Here we talk about Frankenstein's penis.
Or lack thereof.
Right. So he says this cheerful farewell to Elizabeth. And he leaves. And a couple days into the journey, he meets up with where he was supposed to meet up with Clerval, and then they continue on to England. And it's this beautiful, wonderful journey. Every step of it is filled with wonderful people and beautiful scenery, and even Frankenstein can't help but have a little bit of a good time. The scenery is wonderful, and Clerval is constantly speaking on it and making friends with everyone. He's very gregarious, and he writes these long, beautiful poems about how beautiful everything is all the time. And then in his story, Frankenstein says this, quote, Clerval, beloved friend, even now it delights me to record your words and to dwell on the praise of which you are so eminently deserving. And where does he now exist? Is this gentle and lovely being lost forever? Has this mind perished? Does it now only exist in my memory? No, it is not thus. Your form, so divinely wrought and beaming with beauty, has decayed, but your spirit still visits and consoles your unhappy friend. End quote.
What the actual fork? That was the creepiest excerpt you've done so far.
So he throws this out in this story that he's telling to Robert Walton on the ship. And then he just jumps back into his story. And by December that year, Henry Clerval and Frankenstein make it to London. And that's the end of the chapter.
Is Henry dead? Is he an imaginary friend? Did he get turned into a monster? Any of these could be true with that one quote.
Chapter 19. So Clerval and Frankenstein spent some months in London. Frankenstein's dark and brooding, this dark brooding loner all the time, always sad, always guilty, always nervous. And Clerval is just joyous and charming and gregarious and all this stuff. Clerval is out here in London because he's chasing his business dreams of colonizing India, if you remember. And Frankenstein works to gather the research that he heard about this philosopher did. He also says, quote, I now also began to collect the materials necessary for my new creation, and this was to me like the torture of single drops of water continually falling on the head. Every thought that was devoted to it was an extreme anguish, and every word that I spoke in allusion to it caused my lips to quiver and my heart to palpitate. End quote. So he's his normal nervous wreck self. While in London, Clerval and Frankenstein receive this letter from a friend of theirs that they know that lives in Scotland. And he says, oh, you guys should totally come visit me in Scotland. And Clerval thinks this is a great idea. Yeah, we should do that. Frankenstein sees this as a good opportunity to find a place to work because London is very metropolitan. And if he goes out to Scotland, he could maybe find some remote place to work. Quote, I packed up my chemical instruments and the materials I had collected, resolving to finish my labors in some obscure nook in the northern highlands of Scotland. End quote. I put that quote in there because, again, he only ever refers to his, quote, chemical instruments, end quote, when he's talking about bringing dead humans back to life. Again, no electricity, which is kind of interesting.
I love that he's going to Scotland for this because that's, I think, the image I always had in mind about the spooky, foggy, like place that Frankenstein was born. I don't know. This is just fitting into my mental narrative really nicely.
Yeah, right. It's because the place where he comes from is very much more Sound of Music, right? Like it's all beautiful Switzerland and stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that mean Frankenstein and his monster have an accent?
I mean, if they do, it's French for sure because they both speak French. Oh, man. That's great. Frankenstein does something. Sorry, go ahead.
No, when people see the monster, they're like, oh my God, is that a baguette in your pants? I'm sorry. What
I just
you
picture him
say?
doing something naughty and then sprinting across through the darkness like.
Oui, oui, is a baguette in my pants.
Oh my God. All right. So they're off to Scotland. They have this beautiful, wonderful journey again through all the sights of England for several months. They visit all these historic towns and that sort of stuff. Quote, for an instant, I dared to shake off my chains and look around me with a free and lofty spirit, but the iron had eaten into my flesh, and I sank again, trembling and hopeless, into my miserable self. End quote. So yeah, I mean, like, he's pretty low, and it's just gonna get worse. Spoiler alert here. But Clerval's having a great time, and he's really happy, and he's, you know, always composing poems and all this stuff. The journey is taking long enough that Frankenstein is starting to worry about the monster. Is he following them? Is he in Geneva haunting or threatening his family? Would he notice how long they were taking and then murder someone out of rage? These things are starting to worry him. So they make it to Scotland, where they're supposed to meet their friend. And Frankenstein tells Clerval, look, you go meet our friend by yourself. I've got to go on a trip by myself. I have to go be alone. And Clerval tries to argue. He's like, well, I don't want you to do that. But he's sad, but he finally agrees. He says, okay, you go off by yourself. Frankenstein leaves to find a place where he can start this project. He travels to one of the remote islands off the coast of Scotland called the Orkney Islands. Quote, it was a place fitted for such a work, being hardly more than a rock whose high sides were continually beaten upon by the waves. The soil was barren, scarcely affording pasture for a few miserable cows, and oatmeal for its inhabitants, which consisted of 5 persons, whose gaunt and scraggy limbs gave tokens of their miserable fare. On the whole island, there were but 3 miserable huts, and one of these was vacant when I arrived. This I hired. End quote. So he's on this really desolate island in, like, basically this small house. The people who live there on this island are so poor and so desperate that they don't even ask any questions, even though this is only like the 6th person on the island. Here in this hut, Frankenstein starts his work, day by day, going on, in constant fear of the monster showing up again. Quote, it was, indeed, a filthy process in which I was engaged. During my first experiment, a kind of enthusiastic frenzy had blinded me to the horror of my employment. My mind was intently fixed on the consummation of my labor, and my eyes were shut to the horror of my proceedings. But now I went to it in cold blood, and my heart often sickened at the work of my hands. End quote. And that's the end of the chapter.
Ooh, I have the stomach queasies with the end of this chapter. Like, ew.
I was going to say that. So Airbnb existed back then. He's just like, hey, here I am. Oh, no.
Yep. Frankenstein is actually the cause of the first disclaimer. This like, no horrendous body experiments in my house, please. Thank you.
He's the reason why there's a cleaning fee.
No.
Extra for corpses. All right. Chapter 20. So his work is pretty far along. This experiment is actually going fairly quickly. He's sitting there in his lab. The sun has just set, and he's considering whether or not it's worth it to light all the candles and work through the night, or if he should just call it good for now. So he's sitting there in the darkness next to these, you know, literal corpse parts, thinking about what he's doing. And he's wondering about how this is going to turn out in the long run. Because it's possible this new monster he's creating could be way worse than the current one. And it's also possible that he could create this monster, they could meet each other, and they might hate each other. It stands to reason that they would find each other hideous. And he also thinks, oh my God, they could have kids.
Ooh.
Quote.
Called it.
I had before been moved by the sophisms of the being I had created. I had been struck senseless by his fiendish threats. But now, for the first time, the wickedness of my promise burst upon me. I shuddered to think that future ages might curse me as their pest, whose selfishness had not hesitated to buy its own peace at the price, perhaps, of the existence of the whole human race. End quote. So he's really starting to think, maybe this was a bad idea. And just as he's thinking this, he's looking around, he looks up at the window, and then through the window, there he is. The monster up above is grinning down at him through the window in the darkness, watching what he's doing.
Okay, so I feel like I'm too late to say this, but I really don't like horror movies, and I'm learning I don't like horror books either.
I'm sure his intentions are fine. He's being kind. So Frankenstein is so terrified and disgusted and thinking about what he's been doing. It hits him. He's making another one of these. So trembling all over, terrified, he turns around and he rips his creation to pieces, throwing body parts everywhere.
In front of the monster?
In front of the monster.
Oh.
The monster howls in anger and dashes away from the window. So Frankenstein's kind of in trembling shock. He just leaves his lab, locks it, goes back to his room, and just sits there in the silence, waiting. And it's so quiet on this island that eventually he can actually hear a boat approaching the island. And then he hears someone entering his hut as he's sitting there in his room. And the monster appears in the door of his room and closes it behind him. And the monster says, yeah, I followed you all the way here, and now you're breaking your promise, huh? And Frankenstein, for once in his life, is firm. He says, absolutely, I'll never create another one of you, ever. And the monster says, quote, slave, I before reasoned with you, but you have proved yourself unworthy of my condescension. Remember that I have power. You believe yourself miserable, but I can make you so wretched that the light of day will be hateful to you. You are my creator, but I am your master. Obey. End quote.
Dang, he's a bully.
He is now.
I am genuinely afraid right now.
But we know he ends up okay because he's telling us this story.
That's true.
But we don't know if he's disfigured. Throw that back out there.
Right. But Frankenstein stands firm. He says he won't do it. He still refuses. And the monster is livid, and he starts, you know, waxing philosophical about how what everyone in the world, every creature in the world gets a companion but me. Is that how it is? And he swears terrible vengeance that he's going to do terrible things, but Frankenstein still refuses. And the monster says, quote, it is well, I go, but remember, I shall be with you on your wedding night. End quote. And this is a bridge too far for Frankenstein. He gets really angry and he attacks him. But again, the monster is huge and super fast. He easily eludes it, vanishes out into the night onto his boat, and leaves out in the darkness. So Frankenstein sits there alone in his room after this. He's just enraged, thinking about all this, and it gets angrier and angrier. And he wonders who the demon's going to attack next. Based on the monster's final words, I'll be with you on your wedding night, he's convinced that the monster is going to come murder him on his wedding night. Frankenstein paces around his little island all night, through the night, into the morning, until he finally falls asleep in some grass. He wakes up and he's slept through the whole day. It's already evening. A messenger arrives to the island in a boat with a letter for Frankenstein, and it's from Henry Clerval. And Henry says, hey, we're done hanging out here in Scotland, and I have some business things I need to do in London. We really need to leave, and I'd really like you to join me. So Frankenstein decides, all right, I guess I'm done here, so he's going to go back to meet Henry Clerval. But before he leaves, he's got to get all his chemical instruments, which are still in the lab. So he summons all his courage, and he unlocks the lab. And inside, there's his tools, and there's the mangled body parts all around. He decides, well, I can't just leave these here. The peasants here are going to think I'm some insane mass murderer. So he gathers them all up in a basket, puts some rocks on it, and he intends to dump this basket of body parts in the ocean. At 2 or 3 in the morning, he takes his little boat out into the ocean and dumps the basket. And it sinks, and he watches it sink. And he falls asleep in the boat. Hours later, he wakes up and he realizes how many hours he slept, but now he's like way far out to sea, like miles. There's huge breaker waves and he can't see the shore at all. And he realizes he doesn't know the geography of this area. He might be screwed. He starts panicking. For hours, he fights the wind and the huge waves in his boat, trying not to sink, until the wind dies down. And then finally, in the distance, he can see the shore. So he sails towards a town he can see on the shore. When he makes it to the dock, he's relieved. He's actually feeling very happy that he's alive. A small crowd has gathered to see his ship on the dock. And Frankenstein greets them. He's, you know, hello, can anyone tell me the name of this town? Instead of welcoming him and helping him, they whisper to each other suspiciously. And they seem kind of angry. So Frankenstein tries to speak to them and finds out that this is Ireland. So he's a ways away from where he started. But the people here are rude and they seem to hate him and he's not sure why. As he goes on shore, one of the men actually stops him and they say, nope, you're coming with me. You need to go see the magistrate, like the sheriff, right? And Frankenstein says, why? And the guy says, quote, you are to give an account of the death of a gentleman who was found murdered here last night, end quote. And that's the end of the chapter.
Oh, no. Also, Frankenstein's monster is going to go to his wedding, kill his girl, and steal her, and be like, this is the body you're going to use. So not only fuck you, but also, like, fuck double fuck you.
Yeah, basically. Oh, you stopped yourself, but I finished. It's okay.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. Necrophilia jokes, man. How far will we go here on Sparity? Anyway. Chapter 21. So this crowd of angry people takes Frankenstein to the magistrate, the sheriff, if you will. And the magistrate's name is Mr. Kerwin, and he asks for witness accounts. Some of the crowd people start stepping forward. A fisherman testifies that last night, he and some family members discovered the body of a, quote, handsome young man about 25 years of age, end quote, on the beach. But his clothes aren't wet, and he's apparently just been killed a few minutes ago. So he didn't drown. Quote, he had apparently been strangled, for there was no sign of any violence except the black mark of fingers on his neck, end quote. So Frankenstein is immediately worried when he hears this because he knows what this means and he starts to freak out like he does and he has to lean on something and he's visibly shaken and the court notices this. Another man claims that they saw a boat with a single man in it that matches Frankenstein's boat out in the water around the time they found the body. And then a woman steps forward and says she saw a one-man boat push off from the shore of that very spot of the murder about an hour before the body was found. This case is not looking good for Frankenstein. And the magistrate decides, okay, we're going to show Frankenstein the body and gauge his reaction because clearly he's mentally affected by this. So we're going to show him the body and see what he thinks. They go into the room where the body is. Frankenstein knows he's innocent. He's still shaken and worried, but he knows he's innocent. So he's like, okay, I'll go see this body. They go inside and it's Henry Clerval.
Taylor, stop it. I can't handle anymore.
Quote, I gasped for breath, and throwing myself on the body, I exclaimed, have my murderous machinations deprived you also, my dearest Henry, of life? 2 I have already destroyed. Other victims await their destiny. But you, Clerval, my friend, my benefactor, end quote. And he falls down in a convulsive fit. Worth noting that he says this out loud in front of the magistrate and all the people.
Maybe they don't understand his French accent.
Well, they actually don't understand his French language, except the magistrate. He speaks French.
Oh, no.
Yeah. So he wakes up later to kind of recall what happened, because he spends the next 2 months in a fever dream fit in prison. And he was told later that he was constantly raving in prison about the monster and how he killed William and Justine and Clerval, and it's all in French, but the magistrate speaks French. After a couple of months of this in prison, he regains a smidgen of sanity and kind of is conscious again and starts recalling his story from that point. The magistrate, Mr. Kerwin, is actually a very kind man and has been checking on him and making sure he's comfortable and that sort of stuff. And one day he comes to visit Frankenstein. And the magistrate says, oh, is there anything I could do to make you more comfortable? And Frankenstein, of course, dark brooding, full of guilt, says, I can never know comfort again, blah, blah, blah. The magistrate sympathizes with him, and you could tell the magistrate is kind of on Frankenstein's side. And he explains that when Frankenstein was imprisoned, he searched Frankenstein's, like, clothes for papers and stuff, and he found these letters from his family. And the very first thing he does is write to Geneva to tell his family and his father, hey, your son is in trouble and he's been arrested and all this stuff. And then the magistrate says there's a visitor for Frankenstein. And his father enters. His father has come all the way from Geneva to come see him. And this is a great boon for Victor. It gives him enough strength to continue on. He's very happy and he immediately asks, oh, is everyone back home safe? Because he's worried about them. And his father says, oh, yeah, they are. They have a very short visit where they lament the death of Clerval and, you know, talk about how unfortunate things are. And then Frankenstein is left alone to recover. Frankenstein is in this very dark mental place while he waits for trial for another month in prison. The day of the trial comes. They have to travel inland somewhere to go to the trial. Mr. Kerwin, the magistrate, arranges Victor's defense. So he's actually completely on his side. And at the trial, it's proven that Frankenstein was on the Orkney Islands when Clerval was killed, and his name is cleared, and they decide to let him go.
Nice Airbnb records.
So it's time to leave, back to Geneva. Frankenstein's father is happy now that his son is free, and he says, oh, this is very fortunate how this whole trial worked out. But Victor's just in the darkest of places, constant sadness and paranoia and nightmares and all this stuff as they're traveling home. Quote, I often endeavored to put an end to the existence I loathed, and it required unceasing attendance and vigilance to restrain me from committing some dreadful act of violence. End quote. So that's where he's at, in his head. But Frankenstein basically has now one purpose that's driving him forward. To protect his remaining family from the monster, and to hopefully kill the monster itself. And that's the end of the chapter. Chapter 22. On the way back to Geneva, Frankenstein and his father stop in Paris to rest. Victor's having, you know, a lot of mental problems that are manifesting as physical problems, and he's having trouble traveling long distances, so they have to rest in Paris. And Victor's father is trying his best to cheer him up. And because his father is convinced that, oh, it was this murder charge that's you know, set him into this latest fit and is bothering him so much. And he tries to make him feel better about that, but Frankenstein tries to express to his father, look, you just don't understand. You just don't get it.
Oh, man. Back to 16-year-old self. You don't understand. This has never happened to anyone in the world ever before me. No one's been this upset.
Oh, my God, Dad. You just don't get it.
You don't understand.
Except that, I mean, this might be a situation that really no one has ever experienced before, so he's got that going for him, but yeah. So he tries to say, oh, yeah, don't worry about this murder charge, my boy. And Frankenstein says, quote, Justine, poor unhappy Justine, was as innocent as I, and she suffered the same charge. She died for it, and I am the cause of this. I murdered her. William, Justine, and Henry, they all died by my hands. End quote. So he just straight up says this to his dad. He said this actually to his dad several times by this point. And his father constantly brushes it off as just like delirium and like, you know, extreme teenage depression, right? Like that. Even though he's not a teenager, he's like, I think he's 23. But so his father never demands an explanation for this. And Frankenstein definitely doesn't give it to him because he's not about to explain to his dad all the stuff that he did. While in Paris, Frankenstein receives a letter from Elizabeth back in Geneva. And she's very worried about him, and she's glad she'll see him soon. And this is like one of those real signs that she really loves him, because she just gushes over him and how great he is and how much she loves him and all this stuff. And she talks about how Frankenstein's been feeling and acting lately. And then she says in the letter, look, I'm just going to ask, I'm just going to say it. Do you love someone else? Because she's come to the conclusion that Frankenstein is so brooding and angry and upset because the same reason their dad did earlier, that he's betrothed to Mary Elizabeth and he doesn't want to, right? That's why he's sad. And so people in his life keep coming to these wrong conclusions, and it's making things worse. Frankenstein definitely wants to marry Elizabeth, but he thinks a lot about the monster's words, I will be with you on your wedding night. He's convinced the monster is going to come to kill him then, and he doesn't want that to happen. But if he delays getting married, the monster might attack someone else in the meantime. And he also kind of decides, look, if it's going to be a fight to the death between me and the monster, fine. Doesn't matter who wins. Let's just get this over with. So Frankenstein writes back to Elizabeth and says, no, absolutely, my love. I want to marry you, and we should marry as soon as we can. In this letter that he says he wants to marry Elizabeth, he also writes, quote, I have one secret, Elizabeth, a dreadful one. When revealed to you, it will chill your frame with horror. And then, far from being surprised at my misery, you will only wonder that I survived what I have endured. I will confide this tale of misery and terror to you the day after our marriage shall take place, for, my sweet cousin, there must be perfect confidence between us. But until then, I conjure you, do not mention or allude to it. End quote. So yeah, apparently he's going to tell her everything, but not until after they get married.
Wow. You know, I feel like that's something you should disclose before you get married.
Right? Before buying a house, you must provide a list of disclosures. Also, before marrying your wife.
Look, I just feel like it's like, you know, the healthy marriage thing to do.
Yeah, right. The therapist says, oh, the number of times this scumbag husband has brought a dead body back to life and regrets it. Ugh.
I think healthy isn't allowed to be used alongside Frankenstein. There's no hope for that.
Yeah, the opposite of mental health, definitely. So they finally make it back to Geneva, and Frankenstein meets Elizabeth, and they have like this kind of, you know, nice reunion. She's really worried about how Victor looks. Apparently he looks worse than ever, like he's about to die. And she looks less healthy too, like she's been worrying too much and all that stuff. They plan to have the wedding in 10 days, like they're just going to do it right away. Preparations are made, and Frankenstein is constantly thinking of the threat of the monster. They plan to honeymoon in a place that used to belong to Elizabeth's noble family, like her real family, that apparently Frankenstein's dad pulled some strings and they got it back, and that's where they're going to honeymoon. Frankenstein is now carrying pistols and daggers with him everywhere he goes. And Elizabeth notices his behavior and the fact that he's doing this, and she seems more and more worried all the time. She's starting to have a downward mental spiral, too. The wedding day happens, and the ceremony happens without incident. Frankenstein and Elizabeth get on a boat, and they sail on this lovely voyage together to the first place where they're going to stay the night, in this fancy estate. And that's the end of the chapter.
Well, let's all prepare ourselves for the wedding night.
Chapter 23. Elizabeth and Victor arrive for the night where they will stay at this beautiful lakeside estate. Frankenstein is terrified and paranoid now that night is here. It's his wedding night. But he's determined to kill this monster. So he's always looking around. He's paranoidly looking around. He's got his pistol. He's got his hand on his pistol all the time. Elizabeth is very distraught because, you know, all of this is going on. And she knows that now there's this dark secret that's going to be revealed to her. And she's all scared about that. And she asks Frankenstein, are you all right? What's wrong? And Frankenstein says, quote, oh, peace, peace, my love, replied I. This night and all will be safe. But this night is dreadful, very dreadful, end quote. So that doesn't help much.
Oh, so you're like hand on, when you said it, he has his hand on his pistol, that's giving me, what is that, Chekhov's gun vibes. Is he going to kill Elizabeth? Is this going to get worse and worse and he's going to think that Elizabeth is the monster and he kills her?
Oh, man. You guys should be writers.
No.
We'll see. So Frankenstein tells Elizabeth that he realizes that, oh my God, this monster is going to show up. It's going to fight to the death. The sight of it might just terrify Elizabeth so much that she'll never recover. So he tells Elizabeth, look, go to our room and go to bed. I'll join you soon. I'm going to stay out here. And she does. Frankenstein is walking all around the house, checking in corners, being super paranoid, opening doors and that sort of stuff. And then he hears a scream. And then another scream. He rushes back to his room, and it's exactly like he thought. Elizabeth has been killed.
What?
There's finger and hand marks on her neck, and clearly the monster did this. Frankenstein just faints. He just faints with horror. And when he finally recovers, quote, "While I still hung over her in the agony of despair, I happened to look up. With a sensation of horror not to be described, I saw at the open window a figure the most hideous and abhorred. A grin was on the face of the monster. He seemed to jeer, as with his fiendish finger he pointed towards the corpse of my wife. I rushed towards the window, and drawing a pistol from my bosom, fired. But he eluded me, leaped from his station, and running with the swiftness of lightning, plunged into the lake." End quote. So a bunch of people hear this gunshot, and they come running. There's like servants and stuff on the estates, and they all come running. And Frankenstein says, oh, there's this person who just murdered my wife, and they all chase the monster for several hours. With no luck. They don't even see a trace. Frankenstein, from exhaustion and, you know, his mental state, faints again, and they carry him back to the estate. Frankenstein recovers a bit and considers what to do. Quote, "Even at that moment, I knew not that my only remaining friends were safe from the malignity of the fiend. My father even now might be writhing under his grasp, and Ernest might be dead at his feet. This idea made me shudder and recalled me to action. I started up and resolved to return to Geneva with all possible speed." End quote. So through this motivation, he manages to find the strength to make it back to Geneva. He travels back. He gets there, and his father and Ernest are okay. But he has to bring this terrible news, and he tells his father Elizabeth has been killed. And his father is so grief-stricken that over the course of the next couple days, his father dies in Frankenstein's arms.
Oh, no.
So can Frankenstein get any lower? Apparently, yes. Yes. Months are passed in this crazed, despairing stupor. When he regains his senses, all Frankenstein's has now is vengeance. Justice. That's the only thing really keeping him alive. And so much of this part of the book is just Mary Shelley throwing out metaphor after metaphor of how depressed can I describe a person. So Frankenstein calls the local magistrate, the local police officer, if you will, and tells him, hey, I know who the murderer is. You and I need to meet. They meet, and Frankenstein sits him down and tells him the whole story, just like we've told here. Tells him about the creation and how he did it and all this stuff.
I thought on the boat, Frankenstein said that this was the first person he'd ever told.
Yeah, right. I thought so, too. But nope, he does tell this guy.
Well, that means this guy's just going to die because, you know, that way. That
yeah, that might have just been a mistake on the author's part, because, yeah, I think he does, like, in the first chapter say, like, hey, I tell you this so it doesn't die with me. But yeah, he does tell this guy.
Hmm. All right.
So at first, the magistrate is listening to this story, and you could tell he doesn't believe it. He's like, okay, this guy is crazy. He doesn't know what he's talking about. But the more and more his story goes on, and the more details that Frankenstein provides, the more the magistrate thinks, oh my God, I think this guy is telling the truth. When his whole story is over, Frankenstein says, this is what happened. You need to help me catch this thing. And the magistrate, you can tell that, number one, he might still think Frankenstein's crazy, and number two, this kind of scares him. So he just kind of balks. He says, hey, look, you've described this thing as insanely huge and fast, and it lives in wild places where no man can go. There's no way we're going to catch this thing. And it's been months since your wife was murdered. He could be anywhere. And Frankenstein gets enraged. He says, you don't believe me, do you? And the magistrate basically says, look, we'll try our best, but don't count on anything. And Frankenstein says, well, you know, this is terrible. How could you? And he leaves and he decides he's going to go get the monster himself and makes it like his life's goal. And that's the end of the chapter. Chapter 24. The first thing Frankenstein does is leave his Geneva home. He can't stay here anymore. He can't deal with this anymore. So he gets some money together, some jewels, some money and that stuff, and he leaves. The first place he goes is the cemetery where his family members are buried. It's quiet, it's nighttime, and he's again overcome with emotion. As he's here in this place, he feels like this is very significant. He feels the presence of spirits watching him. And once again, he does that thing where He's alone outside in the dark and he's overcome by emotion and he yells out loud, quote, "By the sacred earth on which I kneel, by the shades that wander near me, by the deep and eternal grief that I feel, I swear, and by thee, O night, and the spirits that preside over thee, to pursue the demon who caused this misery until he or I shall perish in mortal conflict," end quote. So he says this out loud, and then through the darkness out in the trees, he hears this dark, scary laughter. Quote, "The laughter died away when a well-known and abhorred voice, apparently close to my ear, addressed me in an audible whisper, 'I am satisfied, miserable wretch. You have determined to live, and I am satisfied.'" End quote. So Frankenstein is shocked. He spins around, and he sees the monster. It is now sprinting away from him, and it's already so far away from him. He tries to chase it, but he fails. And it's at this point where Frankenstein's journeys all around Europe and Russia and a good part of the world start chasing this monster. Quote, "I have traversed a vast portion of the earth and have endured all the hardships which travelers in deserts and barbarous countries are wont to meet. How I have lived, I hardly know. Many times have I stretched my failing limbs upon the sandy plain and prayed for death, but revenge kept me alive. I dared not die and leave my adversary in being." End quote. So he travels light, and he lives rough. He's hunting wild game to survive sometimes. He's buying stuff for peasants sometimes. Sometimes he shares his wild game with peasants. He believes strongly that the spirits of his deceased family members are guiding him.
Okay, quick question. So you said his dad died in his arms. So is Ernest, his brother, the only one that's still alive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Ernest is still alive.
Okay. Okay, so that's like, that's all that's left.
Yeah.
Proceed.
Yeah, yep. So sometimes he encounters people in villages who are like all terrified and they've seen a monster and he asks like, which way does it go? And sometimes when he's lost the trail for a long time, the monster will purposefully leave him a clue so that Frankenstein doesn't fall too far behind. And sometimes he'll just like write messages for him. One of the messages he writes says, quote, "My reign is not yet over. These words were legible in one of these inscriptions. You live and my power is complete. Follow me. I seek the everlasting ices of the north, where you will feel the misery of cold and frost, to which I am impassive. You will find near this place, if you follow not too tardily, a dead hare. Eat and be refreshed. Come on, my enemy. We have yet to wrestle for our lives, but many hard and miserable hours must you endure until that period shall arrive." End quote. So he chases him further and further into the icy wastes of the north. Another note later says, quote, "Prepare. Your toils only begin. Wrap yourself in furs and provide food, for we shall soon enter upon a journey where your sufferings will satisfy my everlasting hatred." End quote. So now we got like some Saw stuff going on.
And I know that Frankenstein's monster has like wants like a happy life, but this kind of sounds like fun.
It's like a scavenger hunt.
Yeah, exactly.
If you make it to the end, then Mortal Kombat for everyone. Yay!
In which you will lose. So enjoy that.
Yeah, right. So Frankenstein thinks he's clever. He gets a hold of a sled and some sled dogs. He's going to travel across the ice with sled dogs. And he's starting to catch up with the monster. He finds a small village where the people there are all terrified. And apparently there's been this terrible event. They say that a huge, terrible monster who had guns stole a bunch of food and a dog sled and left. And so Frankenstein goes, oh, that must be him. And he presses on. Eventually, Frankenstein sees the monster and his dog sled in the distance. And he chases him for days until he almost catches him. He gets like a mile away and he's chasing after him. And as he's about to get close, the ice that they're on out in the far northern wastes breaks up. There's this huge wave and it destroys all the ice and Frankenstein ends up stranded on an ice raft. And that's the raft that they found him on this boat.
Ooh, okay, so we're caught up.
Yep. Frankenstein ends his story by making Robert Walton swear that if Frankenstein doesn't make it, he'll kill the monster if he sees him, that Walton will kill the monster for him. Quote, "Swear that he shall not triumph over my accumulated woes and survive to add to the list of his dark crimes. He is eloquent and persuasive, And once his words had even power over my heart, but trust him not. His soul is as hellish as his form, full of treachery and fiend-like malice. Hear him not. Call on the names of William, Justine, Clerval, Elizabeth, my father, and of the wretched Victor, and thrust your sword into his heart. I will hover near and direct the steel aright. End quote. And that's the end of Frankenstein's story to Robert Walton.
Wait, did he just say you kill him? Like, I know, yep. I know he said, like, if I die, you gotta kill him. But did he just say, like, all right, you kill him, I'll watch from afar?
No, no, he said basically, if he dies, then Walton needs to do it, is what he said. Walton in continuation. So the last part of this chapter is actually pretty long, because now we're back to Robert Walton's letters to his sister about his North Pole expedition. The story that Frankenstein was telling was over, and this letter is dated August 26th. And this first long letter is where Robert Walton reacts to this story to his sister, Margaret. Like, holy shit, did you read that? Can you believe that? Right? And he's talking about how Frankenstein was, you know, sometimes moved to passion and rage when he was speaking, and sometimes he could barely talk. And he also mentions that he tried to get Frankenstein to tell him how he did it. Like, he actually calls out the idea that he actually tried to wheedle this information. Quote, "Sometimes I endeavored to gain from Frankenstein the particulars of his creature's formation, but on this point he was impenetrable. 'Are you mad, my friend?' said he. 'Or whither does your senseless curiosity lead you? Would you also create for yourself and the world a demoniacal enemy? Peace, peace! Learn my miseries and do not seek to increase your own.'" End quote. So yeah, Frankenstein never tells anybody how he does this. It took a full week for Frankenstein to finish this story. And Walton talks about how impressive Frankenstein is and how, you know, he actually describes him as like godlike, and how incredible it was to listen to his story. So there's some thematic stuff here about how, you know, mankind shouldn't go too far, like Icarus stuff, too close to the sun, that sort of thing. The next letter is dated September 2nd, and the ship is once again surrounded by ice to the point that they are stuck. And the whole crew is starting to think they're all going to die out here. That one's a very short letter, and that's all it says. September 5th is the next letter, and they're still stuck. Several crew members at this point have actually died from the elements and all this stuff.
Oh, dang. This took a turn. Like, go on. Sorry.
That's all right. The crew bands together this small mutiny. They get together and they go to Walton's office, and they demand that, look, if we get a chance to sail out of this ice, we're done with this trip. We're going back to England. And Walton feels like his hands are tied. He's like, what am I going to do about this? But then Frankenstein gets up out of his bed and he gives this speech that's so incredible and so moving that the men change their minds. And Walton's very thankful because, oh, wow, I guess, you know, Frankenstein's such a wonderful speaker and eloquent leader that he managed to convince his men not to abandon their trip to the North Pole. September 7th. The crew again, they're still stuck in the ice. And the crew again says, look, they turn again and they say, we have to go home. If the ice breaks, we're done. We're going home. And Walton's really sad and upset, but he agrees. The final letter is from September 12th. So on the 9th, the ice breaks up and they get a chance to sail and they can leave. When this happens, the crew cheers. And Frankenstein wakes up and he asks, whoa, what's going on? And Walton says, yeah, I'm really sad about it, but we're going back to England. Frankenstein says, well, I'm not going back to England. And he gets up. He's going to go. He's got to go chase the monster. He gets up. He's going to get out of here and leave. But he's so weak and so derelict that he faints. Walton and the ship's doctor realize that Frankenstein is dying now. And Frankenstein gives this long, dying speech. He reflects on life and he forgives himself for creating the creature. And he also believes he did the right thing in refusing to create the second creature. And he also accepts that it was his responsibility to make the monster happy. He did have an owed debt to the monster, but he still believes the monster deserves to die. And again, he asks Walton to swear that he will finish the job. If, you know, if I don't make it, you need to kill this monster. Though he does understand that Walton has to take his crew home. And he says, look, if you don't want to keep going to the North Pole, I understand. But if you ever encounter the monster, you have to kill it. And in his bed, in the cabin on the ship, Frankenstein dies. Midnight that night, as Robert Walton is walking around his ship, there's a sound from the cabin where Frankenstein's bed is. And Walton goes to check it out. Quote, I entered the cabin where lay the remains of my ill-fated and admirable friend. Over him hung a form which I cannot find words to describe, gigantic in stature, yet uncouth and distorted in its proportions. As he hung over the coffin, his face was concealed by long locks of ragged hair, but one vast hand was extended, in color and apparent texture like that of a mummy. When he heard the sound of my approach, he ceased to utter exclamations of grief and horror, and sprung towards the window. Never did I behold a vision so horrible as his face, or such loathsome yet appalling hideousness. End quote. So the monster's here, in the cabin. And Walton's having a really hard time looking at him. He has to turn his eyes away because it's so hideous. And the monster has been talking, and apparently he's been, like, muttering to himself grievances and about how bad he feels. And the monster then speaks to Walton. Quote, that is also my victim, he exclaimed. In his murder, my crimes are consummated. The miserable series of my being is wound to its close. Oh, Frankenstein, generous and self-devoted being, what does it avail that I now ask thee to pardon me? I, who irretrievably destroyed thee by destroying all thou lovedst. Alas, he is cold. He cannot answer me. End quote. So now he's actually like giving speeches of guilt. Walton approaches him, although he's still like looking away because he can't stand to look at it. And he tells the monster, he basically tells him off. He says, hey, you know, you may be eloquent in speech and all this stuff, but you're wrong and your apologies mean nothing and you deserve this. And the monster defends himself. He says that, look, all this revenge, you think it made me feel good? He says about his revenge, quote, I pitied Frankenstein. My pity amounted to horror. I abhorred myself. But when I discovered that he, the author at once of my existence and its unspeakable torments, dared to hope for happiness, then impotent envy and bitter indignation filled me with an insatiable thirst for vengeance. I knew that I was preparing for myself a deadly torture, but I was the slave, not the master, of an impulse which I detested yet could not disobey. Evil thenceforth became my good. End quote. So Walton remembers what Frankenstein said about watch out for his eloquent speech. And again, he says, no, you're wrong, you know, and recuses the monster. And the conversation goes on for a while like this. And Frankenstein's monster says, look, he may have told you the whole story, but there's no way anyone could understand the hours and months of misery that I suffered. And I was never able to satisfy my desires. I always wanted love and fellowship, and I can never get it. Quote, but it is true that I am a wretch. I have murdered the lovely and the helpless. I have strangled the innocent as they slept and grasped to death the throat who never injured me or any other living thing. You hate me, but your abhorrence cannot equal that with which I regard myself. End quote. And the monster assures him, look, this Frankenstein, this guy, this is my last kill. I'm never hurting anyone again. And the only thing left for me is death.
Sounds super sus.
And he explains his plan. He says he's going to go the rest of the way to the North Pole. He's going to build a funeral pyre and set himself on fire. And the monster says farewell to Walton and farewell to Frankenstein and says, quote, soon these burning miseries will be extinct. I shall ascend my funeral pile triumphantly and exult in the agony of the torturing flames. The light of that conflagration will fade away. My ashes will be swept into the sea by the winds. My spirit will sleep in peace. Or if it thinks, it will not surely think thus. Farewell. End quote. And the monster jumps out the window onto an ice raft and disappears into the darkness. And that's the end of the book.
So he's potentially still alive.
Yeah,
there right? could be a Frankenstein too.
That was actually like a really kind of sad, sweet ending.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah, like it spends the last part with him just basically saying, yeah, this sucks and I'm sorry and, you know, life is hell, but what can you do? And yep.
Yeah, you said that this was the like September, whatever, was the last letter. And I was thinking, oh no, this is going to end really poorly. He's going to massacre everyone on the ship or something like that. And again, I am just flabbergasted.
For all the horror buildup, I feel like there could have been a more gory ending where he died.
Yeah, I agree. I kept waiting for that because it went from slasher to spooky, then back to slasher. I'm like, okay, so it's slasher, that's what it is, but it kind of just ended spooky.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. No, I think it definitely goes more for like the life philosophy type stuff than it is like the try to freak you out type book.
I don't know. Crystal was pretty freaked out in between
some chapters. I was super spooked. Seriously, I was genuinely afraid a few times. I was thinking, am I supposed to comment on this? I don't have the bandwidth.
Which part scared you the most?
I think it hit the him threatening Frankenstein in the Alps or whatever after that. No. His face in the window in Ireland. That was the spookiest part for me.
Kalina, do you have a scary part?
No, I don't think so. I think it was mostly like, I was just like, oh, yep, he's going to be there. He's going to be there staring at him in the window. Oh, yeah, there he is. Like, it was kind of like, I feel like a lot of like, nowadays, you've got horror that pulls from like ideas from this. So it's kind of like, oh, I feel like this is what's going to happen. And it does, you know?
Yeah.
The scariest part for me, definitely Frankendong.
You mean the baguette?
It was just a baguette all along, Taylor.
Actually, the scariest part is the thought of Frankenstein sitting there in his lab with like multiple penises, and he's like,
Which one?
That one, yes.
That was the line when he was making Frankenette, as he was holding a bunch of vaginas, and he's like, I can't do this.
Yeah, right? He's like, look, with the penises, it made sense, but like, this is just, oh, man.
This is a line I can't cross.
How do I pick the best one?
The penis is easy. You just pick the biggest one.
Yeah, right? Vagina, like, you have to do, like, some investigation, and you're like, oh, that's it. I'm done. No, no more. Nope.
That's the line I can't cross. This is just abhorrent.
Oh,
boy.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if we can end on that. I think we need something else to end it on.
That's the end of Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, everybody. Thank you so much for listening to Disparity. Hopefully we'll see you again next time when we start with another classic, because that's what we do here on Disparity. More classic books for you. And we'll see you later. Now's your guys' chance to add something if you want.
Oh. I got a... Nope, nothing. Nothing's coming.